This week on Hear Me Out, are you feeling under the weather because of the spring we don't seem to be having this year? Or just super worried about climate in general?
And I had just read the latest climate change disaster news and felt all shaken up. And she looked at me and says, I know what you mean.
Then, can songs like this really make you happy?
That enabled me to kind of like build a happiness playlist, which is something that like never occurred to me.
These stories and this week's regional news roundup after this. Welcome to Hear Me Out. I'm Robin Washington. Are you feeling under the weather? Down because the spring we don't seem to be having in the Northland this year? Or worse, just super worried about climate issues in general? You may be suffering from climate change anxiety, which is said to be afflicting a growing number of people. This is not a debate over whether climate change is real or if humans are the main cause, though we'll address those questions. Rather, it's about a malady that's very real to those claiming to have it. For a backgrounder, here's reporter Ethan Weinstein of Interlock Media in Cambridge, Massachusetts, who's looked at the syndrome around the country.
There's no shortage of news stories about climate change. From fires in California to changing sea levels and the melting ice caps, not to mention the political debate over whether the causes are natural or human-made. But this debate, along with the warming temperatures, may have sparked a new condition, climate change anxiety. It's described as the paralyzing fear caused by the psychological challenge of grappling with climate crisis. There's even a growing group of clinicians specializing in it.
My name's Robin Cooper. I am a psychiatrist. I've been in clinical practice for over 35 years. I have a combined psychotherapy and adult psychiatry practice. And I have spent years involved with climate change issues. And through my activities there, have had an association with psychiatrists who have been terribly concerned about the mental health and psychiatric impacts of climate change.
What are you experiencing in California?
We are everywhere feeling the impacts of climate change. I had people terrified, particularly parents who were very anxious about the impact on their on what to do with their children. I had a woman who was pregnant at the time and terrified that just breathing the air would impair the health of her baby. I had patients say to me in profound distress, I should have never had my child.
I wanted to talk to someone who has eco-anxiety, the Good Grief Network, an organization in Nebraska that leads seminars on dealing with the mental health effects of climate change. Good Grief referred me to one of their participants on the East Coast, UMass Amherst librarian Madeline Charney. I'd soon learn she's dedicated much of the past 4 years to educating people about global warming.
I was so sort of turned on to like all the possibilities of ways people could get involved that almost everywhere I go, I felt like, okay, my job is to like let people know like all these things they could do. Well, we're writing letters and, you know, do you know about this new bill? And, you know, you could put solar and have you had your home energy audit? And I was just totally overdoing it. And I just started to notice people would see me coming and they were probably having that feeling of like, oh no, here she comes. She's going to talk about it again. And I did.
As Madeline's anxiety grew, she had an insatiable appetite for the subject.
In 2015, a graduate student is still working on her dissertation, which is looking at student activists and their spirituality. And one day, I came into work And I had just read the latest climate change, you know, disaster news and felt all shaken up. And I said to her, you know, this is really quite difficult to, you know, come to work and try to shake that off and just go on as if everything's normal. And she looked at me and says, I know what you mean. And then we thought, I wonder how many other people on our campus struggle with this dissonance.
Her first step wasn't to focus more on the latest cataclysmic climate news, and it just as certainly wasn't to ignore it. It was to talk with someone. And one person became two, and suddenly, with their support, Madeline began to act. She felt better. And the snowball keeps rolling. It continues to grow.
I'm Janet Lewis. I'm a psychiatrist in private practice in the Finger Lakes region of New York State. And I'm on the Climate Psychiatry Alliance. I had an experience when my daughter was about 6 years old. She came home from school one day and she said, if I could do anything, I would save the rainforest. And I was really kind of blindsided by that. And I'm sure I said something, you know, benignly positive or whatever. But what I wish I had said was, well, let's see what we can do. I realized, oh, this is what I have to work on. This is the most important thing going on.
That report was by Ethan Weinstein of Interlock Media in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Closer to home, Wisconsin too has its residents who say they suffer from climate change anxiety. Lacey Jackson is 36 and works for a financial institution and speaks with us from Milwaukee. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me and thank you for addressing this topic.
Sure. When did you first start having symptoms, and if you could describe what the symptoms are?
Well, I would say that things really got bad about 2 years ago, and these really are kind of feelings that go beyond general anxiety. They're very overwhelming. I experience things sometimes like waking up, you know, during the night, and I will, you know, think about something that I saw on the news and then not be easily able to fall back asleep because I start dwelling on it. I start to kind of have shortness of breath or feelings of panic when I see, you know, other people around me doing things which I maybe see as careless, you know, like littering, using excess plastic, or not doing things that they could be doing to help.
Putting something in the wrong recycle bin. We actually had a story about that. Yeah,
I actually listened to that the other day. So.
Oh, great. Are these your only anxieties, or do you have them that are triggered by other stimuli that have nothing to do with the environment or climate?
Yeah, I mean, I admit I am somebody who has dealt with anxiety my whole life. So I'm certainly not unfamiliar with the feelings. This is different. I noticed, you know, a couple of years ago that things started to get worse. You know, in the past when I found worrisome things happening in the world, I often, you know, was able to kind of calm myself down thinking, you know, that the likelihood of that happening is not that great. But because this is on such a larger global scale, the potential negative impacts feel a lot more real and detrimental to me and to really the world as a whole.
Mm-hmm. In other words, there are some normal anxieties, if you will, normal in air quotes.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, anybody gets on a plane and suddenly the turbulence happens, we all look at each other, right? And we say,
right.
Uh-oh, what's going on here? But logic usually takes over and says, well, all right, it's just turbulence, you know, 99.999 go through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're big news, you know, that if there is an accident, if you have an anxiety attack or instance, why are you not able to sort of logically argue it down?
Well, because I think all of these stories, reports, things that I see and hear all point to this is happening, and these are the potential impacts of it. You know, there aren't a lot of statistics about climate change that point in the direction of, you know, hey, things are going better. In fact, you know, you hear more about things getting worse.
Good point. So the airplane analogy is actually a good analogy because this one is something you can't do anything about, or there are no logical statistics that will reassure you.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Have you sought a third-party opinion that's identified this or diagnosed this?
I kind of assigned a name to my feelings really after hearing about it on the radio because, you know, I noticed how overwhelmed I would get when, you know, seeing reports about the environment or seeing things that are linked to climate change. I can't say that I've been, you know, officially diagnosed
right.
with something to help reverse some of the effects are actually ever going to take place.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what do you do about it?
So what I do about it personally, you know, I do my best to reduce my individual impact as much as possible. You know, I'm certainly not perfect, but I try to do things like, you know, bring reusable silverware, reusable coffee cups, just reuse as much as I can. And I try not to make my life disposable, I guess. I try to reuse as much as I can and encourage others to do the same. Sometimes, you know, if I go to the store and I have, you know, reusable produce bags or shopping bags and somebody asks me about it, and that's always like a nice feeling to me, you know, just to say like, hey, other people are interested in changing some of their habits and their behaviors too. I try to pick up when I see trash and litter on the ground to help reduce pollution that's out
sure.
there. I've gotten into the habit of refusing certain things. I know that was brought up on the show that I listened to about recycling is not just reduce, reuse, recycle, but also refuse. So, okay, I'm not going to take a bag. I'm not going to take a straw. So I'm going to do what I can to kind of prevent additional trash.
Mm-hmm. These are all things that would make you feel better anyway, even if you weren't suffering from a, you know, any particular disorder or anxiety. I'm nothing like a therapist, but I would suggest that one does get a calming effect. You're at the store and a person looks at you and they say paper or plastic and you've got canvas and, you know, we all feel good about that.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's good to, you know, promote the good feelings to people too and say like, hey, you can benefit from this. What I see sometimes is, you know, this concept of people just kind of giving up and they say, well, it's already bad. So, you know, nothing that I do is really going to make a difference. You know, it's fine for me to litter. It's fine for me to keep using and carelessly disposing of plastics.
Mm-hmm.
But really, those things do make a difference.
Mm-hmm. I can hear the calming nature in your voice as you say that, too. So.
Oh, thank you.
Right. So is that sort of a, in a weird way, is maybe it's nature's way of getting us to care, to act more responsibly? You have these feelings of anxiety, but they are also being challenged innately by you by doing responsible societal behavior.
You know, I never thought about it that way, but that is a good way of looking at it, you know, kind of putting that into our heads and, you know, making us realize that the more responsible actions do make us feel better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if we can calm ourselves down a bit from some of that anxiety by doing that and by educating people about small changes they can make to better impact the environment, then yes, it's definitely a beneficial thing. You know, I can definitely see how, you know, maybe this is nature's way of telling us to do something.
Mm-hmm. And is that pretty much your situation now, that you're dealing with it by engaging in more responsible behavior that you can affect personally, or is it becoming overwhelming?
You know, I've tried to tell myself really that I can only do so much. I have to, you know, move forward with somewhat of a sense of hope about the situation and hope that things, you know, can change and will change. So I'm just trying to move forward with a sense of hope and feeling as though the little things that I'm doing do make an impact, do make a difference, that I can help educate other people about what they can do. And yes, at times it does become overwhelming. And to be honest, there are times when I don't necessarily engage with a lot of media that's focused on climate change because that does make things too overwhelming for me. I obviously don't want to bury my head in the sand, but sometimes I have to recognize when I can't read that stuff, when I know it is going to become too overwhelming for me,
mm-hmm.
and try to just focus on the positive.
Well, we've been speaking to Lacey Jackson of the Milwaukee area, who has shared with us her anxiety and other reactions to climate change. Thank you again.
Yes, thank you.
So is this type of anxiety real? something you would find in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the official book of accepted psychiatric disorders? Joining me from a monastery outside of Madison, of all places, where she's attending a conference on mental health and spirituality, is Susan Clayton, a professor of psychology at the College of Worcester in Ohio. She's a lead author of the 2017 study, Mental Health and Our Changing Climate, Impacts, Implications, and Guidance for the American Psychological Association. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you very much.
So, well, first of all, what got you interested in it, and when did you first hear about it?
Well, I've been working in this area for, I would say, close to 10 years, looking at the impacts of climate change on mental health. And so I was interested because I'm interested more broadly in the impacts of climate change.
Right. Is the anxiety part, is that in the DSM? Is something that's recognized by the psychological and psychiatric community?
No, it isn't. And I would say this is definitely something that is coming up, you know, from the grassroots, as it were. People are talking about anxiety associated with climate change, but there are no clear criteria, and there's not even a single accepted term for it.
I take it you've had an opportunity to experience our weather in the last... yesterday was about 30 degrees warmer than it is today and about 40 degrees warmer than it was 2 days ago.
Well, interestingly, you know, as I was being driven here from the airport, the taxi driver spontaneously brought up the topic of climate change and how he perceived it as having affected the weather around here.
Right. So let me ask that as a devil's advocate question. Is it possible that some things that people are interpreting as climate change anxiety, is it possible that people are mistaking it for seasonal affect disorder or something like that?
Yes. So let me come at that from a slightly different angle. I think the thing about climate change anxiety is it's not, you know, associated with a set of geophysical conditions. It's associated with your perception, with your worry about climate change. And so in that sense, it's, you know, whatever you interpret as being climate change might contribute, even if you're wrong about it. And part of what that means is that people are vulnerable to this kind of worry, even if they're not directly experiencing the effects of climate change.
Okay. And how does a worry manifest itself?
Most people talk about just worry and anxiety. Some people report sadness. There might be, sleeplessness, difficulty concentrating.
And as you said, they are showing symptoms or some response to stimuli, whether they're right about it or not. And for instance, I could be worried about something happening to a loved one, and in fact, the loved one is perfectly fine, but that doesn't stop me from worrying about that person.
Exactly. I don't mean to imply that, that it is either an appropriate or an inappropriate response. It's just the way some people are reacting to their concern about climate change.
Just think that would cover the political argument, which we're not getting into in this conversation. But if the political argument about whether or not man-made causes are responsible or not, and I know it's 99.9% of scientists versus one, but whatever, the argument is still there. That doesn't really matter, because if somebody still has that perception, then they still may be suffering from
this. Exactly. And, of course, the trouble with, and you talked about being worried about the health of a loved one, or you could be worried about your own health. And so in those cases, you would probably try to reason with somebody and explain to them that, no, you're fine, your health is fine. But that's not the case here. People's worries do have a basis in reality.
Mm-hmm. In that case, would it ever be something that would be included in the diagnostic manual? Worry in general, I guess, would be the issue. I would be diagnosed with anxiety and doesn't really matter why.
I think that's right. I mean, I'm not now, nor have I ever been, part of the committee that makes these decisions about what to include. But I think that it would be rare to include a syndrome associated with a particular type of worry. It would just be, anxiety associated with external events. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that it's realistic, it probably wouldn't be included. So I think when people talk about climate change anxiety, they're often talking about something that it's not a clinical problem. It's not disabling. It's just, it's just worry.
Okay. And you would take worry seriously.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do about it?
Well, I have a couple of recommendations, and you know, somebody who is just experiencing severe anxiety, I would encourage them to seek therapy or at least some sort of support group. But I think some of the most important things we can do are to become informed about the issue and sort of, you know, even though it is a truly scary issue, I think when it's vague and uncertain, that magnifies the anxiety. Or so what, you know, what kind of impacts might you anticipate in your local area? What could you do to prepare for those impacts? And then the second most important thing would be to get together with other people. This could be just a group of people who want to get together to talk about their worries, or it could be a group that wants to actually do something about it, to be politically active or to advocate for behavior change or for more pro-environmental policies or things like that. If you feel like you're doing something, you don't feel so powerless, and I think that would remove some of the anxiety and worry. But also there are very positive feelings just of being part of a group. So there's that social support aspect as well.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Susan Clayton, a professor of psychology at the College of Worcester in Ohio. She's the lead author of a 2017 study, Mental Health and Our Changing Climate, for the American Psychological Association.
I think that part of the reason we're seeing this now is because climate change is sort of more accepted by the public. It's something that we talk about and the media will cover, but of course you still hear from people who, you know, don't believe that it's happening. And I think that contributes to the anxiety. I think once we there's more universal acceptance that this is an issue, then people can kind of confront their worries head on. But I do think it would be healthier for us to, you know, just acknowledge this as a problem as a society, as opposed to some people feeling like they can't bring it up in conversation because they might offend or alienate somebody else.
Politically.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. And I think that even political, the number of people who are denying climate change in itself is smaller than, you know, if there's another side. I think there are people who are saying, well, yes, it's happening, but it's not necessarily human caused. In which case, even if that argument is out there, if I'm suffering from something that stems from this, whether or not it's human cause, and I'm not taking a position on that, if I do something, if I recycle, that's still a human action I can take.
Exactly. You don't have to. It doesn't have to be human caused in order to be something that humans can address.
We've been talking to Susan Clayton, professor of psychology at the College of Worcester in Ohio. She's the lead author of a 2017 study on mental health and our changing climate for the American Psychological Association. Thank you, Susan.
Okay, thank you.
This is Hear Me Out. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Hear Me Out. I'm Robin Washington. That's Pharrell Williams' Happy, a song recommended by, of all people, Mark Malman, a Minneapolis rock and roll legend and hipster, at least the baby boomers like me. It's all part of his book, The Happiness Playlist, which, in addition to listing 50-plus tunes to raise your spirits, is an autobiographical romp through his own journey to, well, not quite Nirvana, somewhere we can call a happy place. Malman will be in Duluth tomorrow night as part of the final weekend of the Red Herring Lounge, the venerable hipster club, did I say that again, that's closing its doors after a five-year run. Malman spoke with my Wisconsin Public Radio colleague, Walt Dizzle, about his book, his music, and his playlist, which weaves in and out their conversation.
And I feel not sure the response.
I recently had the pleasure of speaking with Minneapolis musician Mark Malman about his book, The Happiness Playlist, The True Story of Healing My Heart with Feel-Good Music. It's a wonderful read, and I can't recommend it enough. The book is a candid look at your life. Was it hard to share the real Mark Malman with an audience who really only knows you probably from your stage persona?
I mean, I didn't really think about it, you know. I wanted it to be true, you know. I had read this thing that said, you know, write the book you want to read. And I really like autobiographical stuff. So I just kind of journaled and didn't think about that. And I think it worked out.
Were there songs of the 50 that you've chosen for this book that people are like, no, I don't get that. That does not make me happy at all. Have you had people arguing with your own sense of what's a happiness playlist?
I always have this fail-safe answer when people try to argue me or want to rather argue with me about music. I always say I feel like music is like food, and we like what we like and we eat what we want to eat. There's not much arguing about, I don't like shrimp, you like shrimp. Are we going to sit around for an hour and try and convince each other to like shrimp? I don't really see that ever happening. And so there's a lot of corporate identity that's been forced upon us with music, where, you know, people say, this is your identity. You have to be a hip hop person, or this is your identity. You have to be a country music person. And I think that's a load of like controlling BS that's fed to us by people who want to make money off of us and exploit us. Because in reality, music is only music, and it's there for us to enjoy as much as riding roller coasters or making out or, you know, eating a birthday cake. And we shouldn't judge other people by the music they love, and we shouldn't judge ourselves by the music that we love or don't love. So I don't believe in the term of a guilty pleasure. I really only believe in the idea of pleasure.
I could not agree more.
I'm a mean machine with gasoline dreams and a love so strong for everything wrong.
I've been a fan of your music forever, and your onstage persona is so happy, so bubbly, so over the top. Is that something that you've been in your true life up to this point as well? Or is that kind of something that was a different than the real Mark Mallman?
It's always been different. From the very first time I started performing in a punk bands when I was young, I just started freaking out. And it wasn't really until I started like giving solo shows behind my albums and when I got it reined in, like around 2002, 2003, when I really like felt like I was on top of my game as far as like going the opposite, where some people might be too still on stage. I was just out of control. And some people, that's their like favorite period. But other people, like now, more popular, and I feel like I've got it reined in, you know. But it is definitely a character that I go into. It's almost like it's been there my whole life, and I just opened it up, and there's that guy. Because anyone who knows me in real life knows that I'm wildly different than the person on stage.
You said something in the book that's really touches, I think, with a lot of folks. You talk about there's a lot of truth in the book, and it's very relatable. Can you talk about the notion of being addicted to sadness and anxiety? I think that in our social media, and you know, the more we're bombarded with those feelings, I feel like that's a lot of people can relate to that.
I think addiction is a dangerous word because we throw it around in a certain amount of disregarding the people who are going through actual real addiction to controlled substances or alcohol or something like gambling. And those are real things that do require a lot of respect, and they're hard challenges for people to go through. But that said, I do feel that we our ego like tends to bias us towards negativity as artists, because it seems like those things are more critically received. Think of all the movies that like win Oscars and the critics say best film of the year up until this like superhero revolution. But before that, the movies were always like, oh no, this won an Oscar, I'm probably going to cry. You know, I think it's something in the ego that makes us think, well, if it's really sad, then it must be true. Life is hard, but there's a difference between you know, complaining and actually enduring hardship.
See the Westland move like a lover soul upon the fields of Bali. Feel her body rise when you kiss her mouth among the fields of gold.
And I think to find music like you've done to celebrate the joy that's in not just, you know, the lives of other people, but your own life, it's a welcome relief. The book that you've written, The Happiness Playlist, is obviously, you talk about some of the things that have been tough and some of the harder parts of your life, but it doesn't ever feel like it's wallowing, you know?
Yeah, like here's the thing. Like, you know, America is kind of a land of denial. We deny pain. We deny death. Even in the movies we create, you know, nobody, like the superhero is never hurt, is always indestructible. And we become like maybe brainwashed a little bit in a way. And for me, I felt like, you know, I just want to write a story that's true and people can relate to, because we all go through, everybody is going to lose somebody or a lot of people and going to get sick. You're going to break a toe. These are just parts of life. Life is a balance of sad stuff and happy stuff and good times and bad times. I wish it wasn't that way. I wish it was all good times. And I say that in the book, but the reality of life is that you have to endure hardships, but the attitude after the fact is really what shapes your personality. And I wanted to write a book that, and I feel like it did write a book that is a kind of a guided meditation. So when you read it, you feel better. Not just, it's not an instructional book that says, hey, you know, here's what you do to feel happy, because I don't know that. All I know is that if I'm really in a bad mood, I say, hey, you know, this is not the time to put on your favorite Nine Inch Nails record. This is like, be easy on yourself, Mark.
You talk about some of the artists that you weren't listening to because they brought you that, you know, down that space. Are there any artists you've completely cut out of your life, or are they slowly coming back to you?
In terms of what I talk about in the book, which is a case of, you know, maybe in the 70s they would call it a nervous breakdown. Today they would call it a case of full-blown PTSD. I don't know what they'll call it in the future. But in the case of that, if anyone's gone through that, it's arresting. It arrests your mind. It arrests your psyche. And so for a time, I had to stop everything. I had to parent myself as to what was going into my brain, because I would be easily frightened, until I learned how to manage my panic and anxiety, which was brought upon by this traumatic event. And so that enabled me to kind of like use it. I didn't know it at the time, to like build a happiness playlist, which is something that like never occurred to me, because I would make a post-punk playlist or a goth playlist or, you know, a Patti Smith's playlist. And I love all those artists. But that was just a little time, you know, where I couldn't do it. I had to like practice some self-care, and I didn't even know what the word self-care meant at that point. But I feel like now, you know, I mean, it took me like 4 years to really recover, and anyone who's gone through that knows it takes a long time. But like I watch my favorite movies, which is the Aliens franchise, I guess they call it now.
That was your go-to happy movie?
It used to be Aliens, the sequel, was it reminded me of my childhood, and I liked the roller coaster-ish niche of it. Now my go-to happy movie would be Singing in the Rain. But I feel like when I want to get happy, I'll put on an Elvis movie. I love Elvis musicals. They're corny, and nothing like bad ever happens. And when I was going through my thing, like I learned about triggers, you know, and a trigger is something, if anybody knows, like people know this, it's something that like, you know, you might see like the misfortunate stereotype of like a war vet, that, you know, we kind of demonize this person coming home from war, and then they hear a loud firecracker and they get really scared. I mean, that's a realistic trigger of PTSD. So there are these triggers that can happen in a movie, and it's, for me, it's violence. And so I had to stop that. And my book, I wanted to make a book that didn't have any triggers in it either. So like there's a reason there's, you know, words that are left out in the book. But as far as regarding what you said, I crank all the music I used to crank, but I'm smart enough to know that like, you know, when my uncle died a couple months ago, like, I was just like, yo, like, take it easy on your heart right now. Just, like, chill, you know? Watch some comedy. We got to be careful, like, what we put in our bodies, you know? And we got to be careful what we put into our minds.
Right. When did you realize that listening to music, rather than playing or practicing, was how you were going to get yourself refocused?
It was when I stopped writing and touring. Like, I just stopped because I had to reformat my life and practice some self-care, you know, methods. And I'm not going to say, like, get my life back together, because the whole time I was working for my clients as a composer and performing rock shows as a performer and singer. I'd been writing and thinking about songs as output for 25 years and never, like, kicking back and just, like, listening to music as something like to accessorize my emotions. So it really, like, I'm new at being a fan of music, and in a way, it's pretty new to me, like, saying, you know, what do you like? What do you like? You know, because when I was going through it, people would say, you just got to, self-care is all about doing things you like, doing things that are good for you. And I would just have a blank stare and I'd be like, what? I don't even know. I don't even know what I like. I don't know what's good for me. I've been, like, sleeping in hotels and floors for the last, you know, 15 years. I'm working on my career. And
some people who are musicians just don't listen to music outside of their job. You know, it's not something they want to even have to think about. They'd rather watch, you know, some sitcom or something.
And there's still, like, this myth of destruction that surrounds like the branding of what a musician should be. So, like, you know, the album came along and suddenly these artists were given, like, tons of money, and some of them, you know, someone like Jim Morrison would live this crazy life, and then corporate record labels would exploit that, and they created this myth of what the rock star is supposed to be. You have to separate yourself from the myth, and you also have to realize that, like, don't play into the game of the corporations. Image is simply image. You know, it's character acting. You're expressing, your art is expressing an idea. Your art doesn't control or define who you are. The moment you put the art before yourself, that's when the art starts to destroy you. You must always be in control of your art.
I think you do a good job of really hitting the nail on the head of, like, everyone can take a look at their own lives and figure out what it is for them that, you know, sparks joy.
Yeah, there's a zeitgeist of positivity happening in our culture right now, which is necessary because we're almost in survival mode against this anger that's happening in our political climate, and also with the collapse of our environment. There's a lot of fear in the air with violence among people of different cultures. And I feel like music is a great way to implement joy that is universal into the world. And I think maybe, you know, people scoff at positivity when they can afford to.
I feel like I should take notes, everything you say. It's a relatable book in the fact that it sounds like someone who's just listening to somebody who's been through things and has good ideas and decided, oh, I should write down what that guy said. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, since it is published on a self-help publisher, and I'm not hiding that at all, but I did feel like, you know, I read a number of self-help books before I even decided I was going to write this book, and I don't like being told what to do. And I don't think people want to be sold something, and I don't think people want to be told something. And so I'm not an authority on how to be happy, and I'm not an authority on how to be perfect. I'm flawed and anxious and human like anybody else. And I felt like, wow, I don't know if I was, like, super rich and famous, if I would have been able to sit down and write this, you know? I think that if I would have been that guy, like, the famous rock star that I thought I was going to be, I mean, the world famous rock star that I thought I was going to be when I was 16, and the verdict's still out, that might still happen. But but right now, I feel that, wow, it was a real blessing for me to just be able to sit down and write a book like about music, but from the perspective of a working class musician. This book is like, okay, how am I going to afford new shoes?
Are you adding to your playlist every day? Do things fall off the playlist that you just get, you know, it doesn't make you happy anymore? Are you discovering new songs every day?
Those were songs, well, I don't listen to the playlist much, only when I need it, but I still do listen to it if I'm like, if something happens and I know, and it works for me, because I didn't even know I was going to write a book when I made this playlist. It just made it for myself. Like a ton of people out there right now who are listening, they have these playlists that they made for themselves. Maybe they haven't shared it with anybody just because it's our Spotify and it's kind of our own, you know, thing. And or so by the time I had said, oh, I'm going to write a book about this thing, I'd weeded out all those songs that annoyed me. You know, some songs surprised me, like especially songs like Steal My Sunshine by Len. It doesn't have any really like lyrics that make sense. If you read the lyrics, they don't make sense. And it doesn't have any bridge or any changes for the chorus regards to chords. And the musicianship is just like a drum machine. It goes against like the musician in me who wants to like score a rock version of Tchaikovsky, you know? So that song surprised me. I'm like, wow, I love this song. It's a beautiful song. It's just, you know, it's just because something's easy doesn't mean that it's not going to work as good as other things, you know? You don't have to listen to difficult music to prove that you're smart.
What can we expect from the reading?
It's been really fun to do these readings, and I'm going to be doing a whole nationwide book tour in summer and fall. And it's just, I get to just bring a book in there, and it's funny, and it's everything that the book is. It, you know, I read sections from the book, and there's a Q&A, and I'll sign the book, and it's that simple.
That was Minneapolis rocker Mark Mauman speaking with Walt Dizzle, host of the Wednesday Night Dean's List on Wisconsin Public Radio, about Mauman's book, The Happiness Playlist. The book is an autobiographical journey about Mauman's quest for happiness, lacing a list of 50-plus songs that helped him along the way. Mauman will be in Duluth tomorrow night as part of the final weekend of the Red Herring Lounge at 2nd Avenue East and 1st Street, that's closing its doors after a 5-year run. So, what else is on his list? You can check it out at the Hear Me Out page at WPR.org. A couple more surprises are Judy Garland's Somewhere Over the Rainbow and Oh, What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong. That inspires me to start a list of my own, beginning with the incredibly happy covers of both songs by Israel Kamikavivole. Back after this. Welcome back to Hear Me Out. I'm Robin Washington. And with me in the studio is Danielle Kading. Welcome, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
Who is here to give us a wrap-up of this week's news. Before you get going, tell me if you have a happiness playlist.
I have On Top of the World by Imagine Dragons and Happy by Pharrell Williams. when I want to feel happy. Sometimes I will play those songs.
Everybody likes Pharrell Williams' Happy. It's on everybody's list.
Well, with a song like Happy, it kind of qualifies, right?
Right. Okay. Well, how about some happy news?
I do have one related to your first piece on climate change anxiety.
Oh, maybe not so happy, huh?
Well, the wet spring weather has pushed Lake Erie's water level to its highest point ever recorded. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers said Tuesday the shallowest of the Great Lakes hit the milestone in May, surpassing the previous peak set in 1986. And Lake Superior also reached its highest known level for the month of May, although it's been even higher at other times of the year. The Corps began measuring Great Lakes levels in 1918. Chief Watershed Hydrologist Keith Kompoltowicz of the Corps District Office in Detroit says precipitation in the region last month was 21% above normal. He says Lakes Huron, Michigan, and Ontario might also set records this summer. And the Corps says flooding and coastal erosion threats will continue along Great Lakes coasts, especially during storms.
Like the one we just had.
Yeah.
Did you experience that this week? Well, you were out of town for a bit, so... I know that because we had a Wisconsin Public Radio gathering. We were there, too.
But it was raining down there as well, and thunderstorms.
Our colleague Paul and I came back earlier than you did, and we got stuck. We didn't get stuck. Paul is apparently more of an intrepid driver than I am. And I was saying, like, should we pull over? You know, and this was Tuesday. I think everybody in town experienced it. It was, I'm telling you, you weren't here. So it was, it just kept coming down, and you kept saying, well, is it going to let up? Is it going to let up? And I'm thinking the lake level heard that too, right?
Yeah, those more intense rainfalls are really wreaking havoc on the area. And it's also become a problem in Bayfield County, where efforts are underway to raise a road there near Pigeon Lake. Heavy rains last June, snowmelt, and wet weather have caused the lake to flood over part of County Road N. And Trish Bantle is president of the Pigeon Lake Association. She says there are around 30 to 40 homes or cabins surrounding the lake.
And I would say half of them are affected now, like to the point where they've got water at their doorstep or water in their home or water in their holding tank or their septic field.
And Executive Director Mike Engelson with the Wisconsin Lakes Association says other lakes across the state are seeing similar issues with property damage or safety concerns.
Earlier, probably about a decade ago, we were in a period where lake levels were very low in very many parts of the state. But with the increase in storms and heavy rainfalls, we certainly have seen this developing more and more where water levels are going up again. And they're creating problems.
A large area of Bayfield County drains into Pigeon Lake, which has no outlet. And the county is raising the west side of County Road N. It raised the east side last year, and county officials say that project may take several weeks. An appeals court has reversed a decision by Minnesota utility regulators who approved the environmental impact statement for Enbridge Energy's Line 3 pipeline. The Star Tribune reports the Minnesota Court of Appeals ruled Monday the environmental impact statement is inadequate because it doesn't address the possibility of an oil spill into the Lake Superior watershed. The State Public Utilities Commission last year approved the review done by the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Several environmental groups and American Indian tribes appealed the commission's approval. Enbridge's $2.6 billion project calls for the construction of a new oil pipeline to replace the aging Line 3, and the pipeline would carry Canadian oil across northern Minnesota to Superior. The Wisconsin and Minnesota Departments of Transportation are putting weight restrictions on the Blatnik Bridge for overweight vehicles. The move comes after an updated load study of the bridge by an independent consultant. The maximum weight of vehicles that can travel across the bridge is now set at 40 tons. An engineer with the Minnesota Department of Transportation said in a news release that the bridge is safe. He said the agencies are taking steps to make sure the bridge remains in service before they can replace it. And both Wisconsin and Minnesota transportation agencies are working on alternatives to replace the bridge, which may happen in the next 10 years.
Now you're saying replace the bridge rather, you know, casually. Replace the bridge.
Well, it was
it's
built
a big bridge.
A long time ago. Yeah.
It's a big undertaking, and yeah. I know it's going to happen.
This weekend marks the annual Be Somebody event in Brule to highlight the need for volunteers to provide emergency services. More than 90% of Wisconsin's fire departments are staffed mostly or entirely by volunteers. Bayfield County Emergency Management Director Jan Victorson says around 30 fire departments and emergency services take part each year to raise awareness and recruit volunteers.
Emergency services are provided by people who are employed at other jobs who are not employed in order to provide emergency services, that this is something they do in addition to any other employment that they have.
Victorson says volunteer agencies are depending more on one another to provide adequate emergency response. As rural populations decline, some departments are dangerously shorthanded. A new bill in Wisconsin aims to give a boost to volunteer firefighters and emergency responders across the state. It would give tax credits between $300 and $600 to volunteer firefighters and EMS workers, plus another $900 in credits for training and equipment. Mark Cohen is executive director of the Wisconsin EMS Association. He said the tax credits would be a first step toward addressing a serious need.
When you dial 911 anywhere in the country, you expect that someone is coming.
Legislators say they'll seek support for the bill in the coming months, and the Be Somebody campaign kicks off this Saturday and runs from 11 to 3 in Brule, just off Highway 2.
All right. Is that it?
That's it for the news.
You mean I got nothing else to give you commentary about?
I guess not.
Well, I might need some reinforcements. So if you out there have a comment on a news or maybe a question you want answered, like what exactly are those people doing on a bridge and why are they replacing a sign, right? You can actually ask us, and Danny, you'll get right on it, right?
Oh, I'm sure you'll be the one to take that on.
Oh, okay.
Robin.
I was trying to delegate there. I thought I had such power. Well, anyway, I'll get the email. How about that? We'll start with the question. So you could send a question about anything on this program, suggestions for new ideas, but particularly anything that you want to know what the heck we were talking about. Send to me, robin.washington@wpr.org. That's Robin, normal spelling, like a bird, dot, and that's just a period. Washington, like a president, at wpr.org. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
That's it for this week's show. We leave you with What Else Happy, covered by Flora Martinez.
Here comes bad news, talking this and that. Give me all you got, don't hold it back. I should probably warn you, I'll be just fine. No offense to you, don't waste your time. Because I'm happy, clap along.